Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Jaguars This Week.
Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Jaguars This Week.
Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
And Tony Bissell.
Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman.
And Tony Bissell.
And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher.
And Tony Bissell.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank.
Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, good evening and welcome to the final two-hour version of Jaguars This Week. I know we're all very sad about that.
I'm sad because we'd be continuing to 2 hours more if we were in the playoffs.
I'm with you.
That's what I'm talking about. Our program is presented this night, as it is every night, 2 hours or not, by our friends at Aetna. Of course, it's only on News Talk, WOKV. Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, Tony Bocelli, John Osher, Joe Fortunato. Fire them up, folks. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351.
It's our last two-hour show, but, you know, the other thing that I just realized, this is the last Wednesday show with Wayne Weaver as the owner because Wednesday is the closing date for the sale of the franchise.
Well, that's why he's going to show up tonight.
We're going to have him on the air.
It's going to be a big weekend for him.
I can't imagine the roller coaster of emotions that he's going to be going through this week. You know, I mean, that's, holy cow, something you've dedicated your life to for 18 years, and then all of a sudden you walk away now. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, slowly saying goodbye.
Right.
We're talking about walking away.
Yeah, I was in the office. I did some sit-downs for the website with Wayne and Dolores in the last couple of weeks. And I don't know why, but when I walked into their offices, I wasn't expecting things to be packed. I know in retrospect that they would be, but it's just an odd thing to walk in, and when things are packed, boy, you realize that it's not just, it's really happening. I mean, it's like when you move out of a house, you sort of realize, whoa, this is for real. And it was, you know, if you've been around the franchise at all, it's a strange thing to think about.
It's the end of one era, beginning of a new one.
Sure.
And it's anytime, you know, like Jeff said and John alluded to, you can't imagine the emotions that Wayne and Dolores are going to go through. And because it's been a big part of their life. They've been to every single game from the beginning. And for that, you know, the longevity, the legacy, all that's gone into that, it's a big change, and it's a interesting time, and it's sad, and everyone's gonna, you never like the change because you hate ushering out or having the old go away, but it's
he just called you old.
No, old.
You know what? He's not far wrong.
But then the new comes in. It's just times of change. Wayne, you said it best. It's bittersweet. You know, it's sad in one sense. It's exciting. There's a lot of different emotions that go into it.
Well, it's a new era, and the truth is we should all be very optimistic about the new family coming in. They have new ideas, and change is good. Change is good, and I'm excited. I'm optimistic. One of the things I'll say to our fans, this team is not far away from being a really good football team. You know, we've got players on injured reserve that are going to come back and really contribute as starters on our football team, maybe five or six of them, some depth, more depth that are coming back off an injured reserve, plus another draft class. So this team is, you should be optimistic about where this team is heading. The arrow is definitely up.
And I think that what gets lost in that, and I think, Mr. Weaver, as you talk about the team and the progress, and a lot of it's been lost because of injuries and guys on IR, I think what's been lost in the last probably 4 weeks, 5 weeks, is the how much progress Blaine's made. And I know we'll talk about that later in the show, but you look at last week. I mean, I think that's also something that the fans and the people who love the Jaguars, and it's sometimes hard to realize that when you lose a ball game and things aren't going the way everyone wants it to. But I think all of us would agree you see the progression of Blaine on the field, and that's only going to add as you get more talent around him on the offensive side of the football.
So, Wayne, a big change. You know, I mean, 18 years. You know, I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, this is not something that, you know, you're kind of slowly stepping away from. I mean, this is, you know, next Wednesday when you walk out the door, that's it.
Don't remind me, Jeff. It's hard enough as it is.
I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, the emotions that you must have, that you and Dolores must have. I mean, when you put your heart and soul into something for 18 years.
No, there's no question. Tony used the right word. It is bittersweet. You can't experience the 18 years that we've had here, and the number of people that have come through this organization that's made so many contributions to the organization. And see them, the ones that left have left for the right reasons. They're going to bigger and better things. And you've got to be so proud of the foundation that we built here and the legacy. You all have heard me say so many times that Jacksonville is a great football market. If you want to think about the difference between Jacksonville and Green Bay, Pittsburgh, it's 80 years versus 18 years.
Yep.
They've grown 8 or 10 generations of fans, young people that have grown up with them, with their fathers and their children, you know. So we're going to be the same kind of community, and we've left the legacy into the hands of a family that's going to continue to build on that legacy and on that platform.
Wayne, other than the Super Bowl, do you leave with anything left undone from your to-do list, from your goal
sheet?
I
don't think so. Clearly, we didn't win championships, and I have to be disappointed that we didn't do that, and I have to be honest with myself when I look in the mirror and say, you know, I'm responsible for some of those decisions that we didn't make right.
Right.
We would have had an opportunity to get there. We did have some opportunities, and we didn't cash in on them. But we're not far away. And I leave with great hope and feeling that that elusive championship is not far away for this team in the next 2 or 3 years.
Well, two of the greatest decisions you ever made was 1995. I mean, drafting Tony Boselli and bringing me in as a free agent. I mean, boy, let's go back in memory lane here.
Yeah, those are good decisions. At least we think so, don't we, Jeff?
Darn right.
Well, they turned out to be good decisions. We didn't know at the time.
Yeah,
there's a lot of modesty in this room, as you can tell.
Wayne, if you look back 18 years ago when you made the decision in 1993 to get involved and get with the ownership group and become the lead of that and being awarded the franchise, did you ever imagine that it would be this big a part of your life and how important this franchise has become to you and Dolores?
That's a good question, Tony, because we were so naive, you know, coming from one of the questions I've always been asked by friends, how in the world does a women's shoe salesman get involved in the NFL? I've been so blessed in my lifetime to build some nice companies, but coming to the NFL was a dream come true that I never dreamed about, though. I never thought about being an owner of an NFL team, and nobody could live the dream more than I have in terms of having 18 years in the National Football League and accomplishing what we've accomplished, because I'm proud of what we've accomplished in the National Football League as a franchise, and I just tell everybody the best is yet to come.
Was it your plan to come in right away and be as involved as you have been all of these years on a day-to-day basis? And yeah, do you think, flip side, Mr. Khan said he's going to stay in Champaign. Obviously, he has a big, successful auto parts business. Do you think he'll be able to stay away from the NFL and the lure?
I think it's so intoxicating that he's going to get much more involved than he thinks. On game day, you know, Dolores and I have never missed a game in 300 Sunday will be 352 games. Never miss one. And you live and die on every play. And you love your other businesses, but it's not the emotional attachment that you have to the National Football League and the Jaguars. So, no, it's going to be hard to walk away, but it's the right time for us, and we feel really good about having left the team in the right hands.
Has your ticketing department tugged on those emotional attachments to the team yet and sold you a couple luxury suites?
Well, the truth is they have. Dolores and I looked at two suites yesterday. So we're definitely going to be a suite holder here and the biggest cheerleaders for the Jaguars.
You know, there were so many Saturday nights where I would see you and Dolores out at McGala for the Ronald McDonald House or the Oxygen Ball for the American Lung Association. You were so involved in this community, and not just writing a check, but being there and sitting at the table and being a part of the event. Will you still be as involved in Jacksonville as you have been?
We will. We probably will travel a lot more, Brian, and not be as quite as visible as we are now. But we certainly plan to be a part of Jacksonville. And knowing Dolores and knowing myself, travel probably gets old pretty quickly. So my guess is that we're still going to be very active and out in the community.
Wayne, as you reflect over the last 18 years and you look forward, to this new era for you and Dolores as well. What do you think are the one or two things that you'll miss most about being a part of the Jaguars and about part of the NFL?
Well, clearly you're going to have to miss game day. It's that's where the adrenaline gets started. The night before, I'm probably a little bit more restless in my sleep. And so you look forward to it. And just being a part of game day in the National Football League. And then you look forward to the other parts of the season. I love training camp, going out into the OTAs early in the spring and watching the young players come in. And I love preseason. I love seeing the young rookies come in and getting a chance to play. I've never understood why fans didn't like preseason more, to see and judge for themselves. There's a sleeper there that's going to make a contribution to this team. So I can't tell you, in the 18 years, there's nothing I didn't love about it.
I would have to think that along those lines, you know, and you talk about game day being one of the best parts about owning it. Along those lines, what were the least favorite parts of it? Because to me, it runs along the same lines. Winning on game day, there's nothing better. Losing on game day, there's nothing worse.
No, there's no question. One of the things, losing on game – win or lose, you're emotionally drained, Jeff. We never would go out to dinner after a game. Friends would say, well, come on, let's go to dinner. You go to dinner, we're heading home and chilling out.
You leave – the franchise with a CBA, with a bargaining agreement, with a business arrangement that says that it can succeed here in Jacksonville.
Well, it can. First of all, we've been successful over the 18 years. There's no reason it couldn't be, but we clearly have the future ahead of the National Football League now with our media contracts in place, 10 years of labor peace. There's no reason. You can forecast what your player cost is going to be. You can forecast all your other expenses and running the franchise. There's no reason for this team not to be very successful over the future years, but there's no reason for any team not. I think parity in the next 10 years is going to be more competitive than it's ever been.
Just as a follow-up, you've been such a champion for the smaller markets. Does this labor agreement now suggest that the small markets don't need a champion? And if that's not the case, if it does, who will step up?
Well, I honestly don't think they need a champion, and there are other small markets that are as outspoken as I am. So there's going to be people that are going to speak up for small markets, but I don't think any club, none of the 32 clubs need a champion. Everybody has a chance to be successful. They just got to run their business right, make the right decisions, in personnel, and drafting, and free agency, and run the business right, and have the right coaching staff, the right give people a chance, the resources to be successful.
Wayne, you have 18 years experience in this, and Shad has none. What's the biggest thing you're sort of telling him in this transition period, which you're going through, obviously?
Well, you know what? I guess the one thing I learned, John, is that I'm big on saying I'm smart enough to know what I don't know.
Right.
And I think that was a wrong approach, because in my other businesses, I knew how to do everything because I grew up from the ground up in those businesses. And I probably was too patient with stuff that I thought we should change or shouldn't change, because I kept reminding myself I'm not an X and O's guy. I'm not a football guy. I'm smart enough to know what I don't know. I was too patient in some areas in personnel. Not that I was picking the personnel, but how can we keep missing? You know, so I blame myself for that. We set our franchise back. So those are the things I've talked to Shad a lot about, is don't tell yourself, you know, you're smart enough to know what you don't know. Pay attention and decide this is where I should get involved.
You've talked a lot about him over the last couple of weeks, but what's the biggest reason for fans to be excited about Shad coming in? You know him probably better than anybody in this process.
Well, there's no question. Shad is very passionate about National Football League, and he's passionate about Jacksonville. And it's amazing. We had a long conversation today. We're going around and really spending a lot of time with the different departments, and we had a long conversation with Mike Ryan. And I learned things today that I didn't know that I've been around 18 years. I should have asked those questions. Shad was very participated in those conversations, because he understands a lot of that. He's right. Been around, and he's seen things, and he's made observations. And he said, and when he walked into our weight room today, our strength and conditioning in our weight room, he said, boy, this is state of the art. he has one or two of those machines at his home. So no, he's going to get involved. That's the thing that I take away from Shad. He's going to be much more involved than a lot of people might imagine.
So what's next? You talk about traveling. Did you get a fishing pole yet? I mean, can me and you go do a little fishing now, or
only if you'll bait the hook for me? No, you know, we haven't had a chance. Right now we're trying to make sure that I get out of the way and get my office moved, so I'm not sitting over in the corner and being a distraction. So I'm trying to get an office set up and make sure that I have a place to go every morning. Otherwise, I don't think my marriage is going to last very long. No, I'm kidding there. But this will be the first time in 60 years that I haven't had a job. So that's a different change. It's a little scary. So I've got to have a place to get up and pretend I'm going to work every morning.
How about a couple of people in the community, not in the organization, that over the years have been instrumental to the success of the franchise? If you were to look back and point out a couple, whether they're political leaders or business leaders.
Well, I would have to say that my partners. I'm blessed with having the greatest partners. And I can tell you from my last business lives and having partners that partnerships at best are hard. And I had partners here that were very supportive, that when asked, they would give you wise counsel. It was good sounding boards, but they didn't try to tell you how to run the business. And so I'm very thankful, and our community should be very thankful. But with the partnership we had here with the Jaguars, it was great. So I would have to say, first and foremost, that I have to give them accolades.
Sure. If you could pick one memory, the greatest memory in 18 years, okay, what would it be?
I don't know if you could, Jeff. There's so many, but there's a few. I guess turning away and not willing to watch the Morton Anderson kick and then
in 96
and launching us into playoffs. Going to Denver and probably winning what was called the biggest upset in sports at the time, and then flying back to Jacksonville and have 30,000 people as the plane banked over the stadium.
I don't think they'd allow that anymore. The FAA wouldn't let the airplane do that any longer.
I know. They've kind of got our flights moving further to the side now, our flyovers. But those are a couple. But, going to Pittsburgh in those two games in 07 and winning two games within 3 or 4 weeks up there, that's never been done before, it's just – it's just so many that there's one or two every year that just sticks in your mind that were great.
All right. What will you do Thursday morning? Next Thursday morning? Is that where you go start to find an office?
No, hopefully, I won't be in my office by then, but hopefully I'll have an address so I can start getting my addresses changed, and I get volumes of mail. I'm doing a lot of other things, setting up a family office to handle all of my investments, which I already have in Indianapolis, and we're going to have to hire a couple more people up there because my people I rely on for investments are located there. My tax guy and my estate guy is in Connecticut, so I'm trying to get all those things organized. Sure. and make sure the mail goes to the right places.
That's important. It sure enough is.
Last thing here from me anyway. Have you ever had a player ask you for an autograph?
I don't think so.
I'm going to be the first, because I have a picture of me when I was playing and you on the field hugging after one of the big Jaguar wins from those early days, and I would love for you to sign it for me,
Jeff,
for my office.
I would be honored.
Thank you.
You have anything while you're at it?
Ball, nope. Just
hat?
I don't have anything to sign, but I should.
You're unprepared.
I'm very unprepared. But I think I speak for everybody. Thank you for bringing this team here, and thank you for all from the players. I know both Jeff and I would agree. Great owner and all the support, and we definitely enjoyed some of the great memories is coming in the locker room after the big wins.
Yeah,
a couple times after big losses wasn't so good to see you, but after the big wins it was always good to see you, and even bigger. And I think as a player and then part of this community, how proud I think we are of you and Dolores and the example and the legacy that you leave, not only with the Jaguars, but with the city of Jacksonville. It means a lot, I know, to me and my family.
Well, I appreciate that, Tony, but I appreciate all of you guys. As I said earlier, it's one of the great things that's been able to be a part of an organization like this. It's so many great people that have made contributions, and you guys are included in that number.
Thank you, Wayne. Oh, Sunday's going to be tough.
Yeah.
I just realized it now. Sunday's going to be tough. Yeah, well.
You're going to get us all emotional.
I grabbed Mr. Weaver on the field on Sunday in Nashville because I didn't know that we'd get this time, and goodness knows what the next week's going to be like. And I just, because I'd been thinking about it. You know, I was 25 when he hired me. That was a world ago.
I was 23 when I showed up here and met. You know. Mr. Weaver and Dolores for the first time. And
when you start thinking about how your life has rolled out based on the opportunities that are given, he has given a lot of people, coaches, players, broadcasters, producers, radio personalities.
Dot-commerce.
Financial
CFOs.
Geniuses. Right. I mean, it's given a lot of people opportunity, and it's tough to quantify that.
Well, you throw that genius term out pretty easily, don't you?
Well, I've been calling you a genius for
a long time. That's what I mean. That's my point
between the two.
When you guys... You guys weren't here before the team. I happened to grow up here from 73 to 93, spent most of my days here. What Wayne did in bringing this franchise here and changing the shape of this community, if you weren't here before, you just can't put it into words. I mean, say what you want about what's happened on the field, or whether people think it's good or bad or indifferent. The biggest win that he ever had here was getting the team here. And it's a bigger upset than anything that happened in Denver, anything that happened anywhere. And the impact that it's had on the community is immeasurable.
Well, and on top of that, Tony had mentioned about what the Weavers had done in the community.
Sure.
Combined, if you look at the Weavers Family Foundation and the Jaguars Foundation, $37.2 million has been donated to this community over the years through those two foundations.
Staggering.
Unbelievable.
Well, and if you look at the overall impact, it's over $60 million with the impact into the charity world as an organization when you add it all up.
That's just what you can measure.
That's what you can measure.
And that's...
But, when I was here as a full-time employee for all those years in the off-season, I was a community ambassador. I was at every black tie community, charity gala. And the funny thing was, they were too.
Right.
I was there because it was what I was supposed to do to be the MC. They were there because...
Well, they care.
They care.
And this is what I think it's... And it gets lost, just like a lot of positives have got lost this year because of a bad record and poor performance in the field. And what gets lost, because we have struggled on the field the last few years, how authentic the Weavers are and who they are and what they mean to this community and this franchise.
If it was just about writing the check, everyone would have been happy enough to have the Weavers write the check. But to have them out in the community shaking hands and sitting next to you, breaking bread with you, well, that was just a bonus, and it's what made it such a special place. So we have reached the bottom of the hour. We obviously ran right through a commercial break. We'll make that one up. And when you get opportunities like that, you don't want to miss it. So news now on News Talk WOKV. Then more of Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, only on Jaguars Radio. All right, welcome back. Jaguars This Week resumes now after a lengthy interview with Jaguars owner Wayne Weaver.
And a 20-minute break.
Well, you got to pay the bills, Tony. We got to pay your exorbitant salary.
It was worth it. It was worth the interview with Wayne. What a great time.
And for those, obviously this is radio, you can't see Wayne Weaver. I mean, you could see that this is not easy.
Nah.
Certain questions that are asked of him, eyes get a little wet, he loves this football team and he loves this city. And when I asked him, it's got to be tough to be able to walk away after 18 years. I mean, that's why I said I couldn't imagine. He's been great for me. He's been great for all of us, and we can't say enough good things about him. And I wish him the best, in whatever he chooses to do, because I know he'll be outstanding at whatever he does choose to do.
Well, I loved it as he said that he has to look at himself and answer the hard questions in the mirror, because he does, and he means it. And there are a lot of people out there that will find that very endearing as he walks away, knowing that he was, and he will be praised for what he did. But he'll always look back and say, I wish I had done this, I had done that. And I think that's the human side of Wayne Weaver that most people don't know.
It's the competitive side of Wayne Weaver. Any competitive person who's driven to be great, if you don't get to the ultimate goal, and even if you do, you look back and say, what could I have done better? What could I have changed to maybe make me a better player, or in his case, a better owner? What would have this decision done to get me to the over the top. And because he's competitive. I mean, Wayne Weaver wants to win.
Tony, after the games, you know, you and I both got to see him after the games, you know, from a player standpoint. But then over the last, 8 years, I've had a chance to see him from a
nine-now broadcaster standpoint.
Boy, you're getting old.
And when the team loses and he comes walking down that tunnel, whether
he's not happy
here or somewhere else, he is not a happy man. I mean, he when he said that after games in which they have lost that when friends ask him to go out to eat and he declines, he's not joking. I mean, he is dead serious. He takes the games, you know.
And as a player, you sense I know we've been in the locker room. You sense that wrath of him not being happy, which, listen, it's endearing because he cares. I mean, I don't know any very many. I know a few other owners, not a lot of them, but I can't imagine many of them caring more than Wayne Weaver.
No.
Not just about the off the field, and we've talked about how charitable him and Dolores are, but he cared about winning and losing.
You ever see his seat in his box with a computer right there? I mean, how many people have that computer built right next to their seat so that they can keep track of everything while the game is going on?
Statistics, you bet, the whole nine yards.
He wanted it all.
Well, he said that, Sam, you know, when I talked to him last week, he said the same thing. He goes, you know, I've got to look myself in the mirror. I'm disappointed. We should have done more. And that's when I kind of walked out of there, you know, and sort of thinking, yeah, it's okay that he's disappointed in that. But again, the bigger victory is the fact that it's here. And you know, that's what you hope he'll always be remembered for. Because win or lose on the field, that upset in 93 makes up for anything that happened after that.
Well, and I promise you, the further we get away from January 4th, the greater his legacy will be.
Right.
You know what I think should happen? I mean, I firmly believe this, and maybe we can make this happen. You know, the pride of the Jaguars has one resident. That's Tony, right here on my right. Why shouldn't Wayne Weaver?
Oh, he should be.
Be put up.
He should.
On the pride of the Jaguars this weekend.
No, I have my own opinion about that. I'd rather do it in the future, next year or sometime, where you actually set up a time and celebrate the 18 years, the legacy, where it's a planned out, bring them back, honor them, and celebrate the era of the Weavers, and do it where it's a full promotion, full push, because he should be there.
He should be the next one up.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah,
that's unquestionable.
Yeah, but and I agree. I'm just saying timing-wise. I think you can even do a nicer and more honorable.
When you said his legacy will only grow the further away we get. You will be able to have an incredible experience at the stadium the day that you do that.
Yep. Plus, I want to make sure I'm there when it happens, and I got to be in another game this weekend. So, selfishly, I'm there.
Yeah, I mean,
really. Well, I mean, it's important to me. I mean, I want to be there.
No, absolutely. And they'd want you there because they're going to want all the pride members.
I mean, I want
there. Would be you.
Yeah, it's a short list.
Exactly.
Tony, you just called Jeff old. I just got a tweet from somebody saying, can you believe it's been 5 years since Tony Boselli went to pride of the Jaguars? You talk about old. You start getting 5 years away from post-career honors.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, that's old.
Just remember this, John. You'll always be older than I am.
I know.
Hopefully.
Sadly, I did the stories when you were drafted.
Yeah,
that makes me really old.
I remember seeing you when I was much younger, and you were older than me at that point.
No question.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351.
For all you guys, you know, with Tony at 71, Tony Boselli up on Pride of the Jaguars, you know, Tom Landry's got the hat. What's going to be with Wayne? You know, and it can't be just Wayne. I mean, it has to be Wayne and Dolores. Am I right?
After a couple of weeks ago, it might be a big check.
Dollar signs? I don't know.
How about just 1994, 2012?
93-12.
I think you put the cat head next to him.
Something.
Yeah. He's had that signature lapel
pin. And he had it on tonight.
From the first time I met him, he had that.
That's good. Yeah. Just don't make it look like Jackson DeVille at all, because his head will get way too big.
Right.
As if it's not already.
Exactly.
Yeah, that little lapel
the
pin.
I'd put the cat head next to Wayne and Dolores' name. Because, you know, look, that was not the logo, as you all know, when it first came out. They helped usher in the new logo.
Mm-hmm.
And he wore that lapel pin. They're synonymous with it. So put it right there. All right, let's do this. We'll step aside for a quick break. Kevin's at the beach. Other callers filtering their way through Joe Fortunato as we speak. 355-NFL-1. You're listening to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back, Jaguars. This week presented by Aetna, live from Everbank Field. Final 2 hour show, so we'll wrap up this segment, take news, and then do the final second hour of the season. And of course, we'll take your calls, questions, and comments. 355-6351 at Tony Boselli, at John Osher. And you want to go to the phone lines?
Yeah, I would want to talk to my callers.
To your callers.
Well, they call me.
You can't tweet.
They tweet
log
you guys.
You can't tweet logging. Go ahead, Kev. What's up?
Guys, it was a cold, it was a chilly evening on November 30, 1993, and I was an 11-year-old boy. And my mom and I, we saw the announcement, and that night we went out and got a brand-new Jacksonville Jaguars T-shirt because the town I lived in my whole life finally had a National Football League team. I had been a Dolphins fan my whole life, and now I was a Jaguars fan. 2 years later, I went to the final game against the Cleveland Browns where Mike Hollis kicked the game-winning field goal on Christmas Eve. And I went with my dad, and it was probably one of the best memories of my life. Wayne Weaver is responsible for so many memories here in my life, who I've become as a man. Growing up here, it's made me want to stay in this town, and it's actually made me never want to leave. Because if Jacksonville Jaguars ever do leave the city of Jacksonville, I have no reason to stay here anymore. I'm not married. I don't have any children. So I would be free to fly, and the Jaguars are one of the major reasons I would love to stay here for the rest of my days, because the Jacksonville Jaguars are part of who I am as a person, and so many other people that are my age. I'm 28 now, and even through all the pain and anger I've, you know, suffered, quote unquote, through bad seasons, it's all worth it. And I just wanted to thank Mr. Weaver and Dolores and put them in the pride as soon as you can.
Strong call.
Yes.
Great. Nice job, Kevin. Well said.
It's a great call. I can't help but think about that game in 95, that last game in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Remember it well.
I mean, here, playing Cleveland,
yeah.
I've never been more happy.
For a season to be over.
For a season to be over.
Well, that broke a seven-game losing streak.
Yeah. You know, and, it had nothing to do with the losing streak. Right. It had everything to do with the fact that we were in pads on Friday. For the entire year, and that I've never been so exhausted and mentally drained from one head coach Tom Coughlin writing us, and it was just
that was the
I remember walking into the locker room, putting my stuff on, and walking out of there saying, "So long, I'll see you in March."
That was a game that I was actually in street clothes.
Yeah, I remember. I was
since I would miss the last four games that year with a foot injury. And so, but yeah, that first year was a tough year. But you know what, though, Tony, I know you'd agree with me here. I mean, all of that, you know, bitter disappointment and the mental anguish that we went through in '95 when we got to Buffalo,
made it all
in
'90
after the '96 season. You just said, "Bring more of that on." If this is what we're going to get every
time,
was that your first playoff win?
First playoff game, wasn't it?
My first playoff win.
You played one game.
My first playoff game ever was when Buddy Ryan tried to punch Kevin Gilbride on the sideline.
Yes, yeah, I remember that one. But I just remember when we got back from that. Is that what you're talking about, when we landed? And remember that at that point there were two roads in and two roads out of the airport, and that was it. It was very underdeveloped.
And do you remember we walked through the terminal?
Yes.
Remember we'd come up to the gate and walk through the terminal there? I remember people being all throughout the terminal. That was before – people couldn't walk through security. I mean, it was.
But the buses were going less than 5 miles an hour because
couldn't
there
go
were
any
people.
Faster.
There were people that were crowding the sides. They were trying to. They were slapping the sides of the buses.
Great.
It was heady stuff.
Well, I remember driving in '96 into Marsh Landing where I was living, and there were signs. And Tom and I lived across the street from each other, and there were signs all throughout Marsh Landing. Congratulations, good job, you know. Yeah. It was
same thing in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time Vic Ketchman telling me, "Now, it's not always like this, remember." And I was thinking at the time, "Man, you're crazy. Why are you putting the buzzkill on?" Of course, that's what he liked to do.
Right. But, because he was Vic.
But
he's probably telling Aaron Rodgers right now, you know, you're not that good.
But the fact but the fact of the matter is he's right. You know, I mean, it's not been that way around here in 11 years. And so you have to go back and enjoy it, and you have to appreciate those times when they're there.
Yeah,
because they are awesome.
Well, it's funny. I can remember vividly being in Denver that week, the week of the game, if you guys had beaten Buffalo, and, you know, talking to media there, and, you know, they would kind of come over and say, "Okay, give me the matchups," and kind of scoff, you know, and what are the strengths and kind of scoff. And I'd say, well, you know, the Spicelli guy did a pretty good job against Bruce Smith last week. And, you know, it was just – it was a given talking to people out there that it was just an afterthought. And, you know, of course, that was the perception nationwide.
That was a great Broncos team. They'd win the next two Super Bowls.
Well, yeah, and that win you guys had against them is in retrospect, probably what keeps them from being remembered as maybe the greatest team of all time, because they probably win that year and, you know,
win three in a row.
I was sick sick as a dog that game. That night before, I was sick.
My lasting memory.
I was dying.
And I've said this on the air before, was that morning going down at the hotel at the old Stapleton Airport and getting a newspaper. I was the first one in, and I read the headline of Woody Page's column, and I turn, and there I'm staring at the Chad Loggy's chest. He was the next one, and he was reading it behind me. And he looked down at me and goes, you see this? Yeah. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
In the gift shop. I'm like, I can't believe that. Look at this stuff.
I was just sitting there going, oh yeah.
He was all geeked up.
Let me add this to my pot and stir it up a little bit.
I mean, I was mesmerized by it. Loggy standing there laughing at it. It was and we were not talking about particular plays. We're talking about moments. My favorite play was Brunell's 29-yard run on third down. Remember that?
At Denver
mm-hmm. that year. All the plays I ever called, that was the one, because Romanowski was getting after it, and Perry was getting after it, and he slid out of the pocket to the right and then wove his way back to the left and then kind of came back to the middle and then went back to the sideline and then set up that Jimmy Smith touchdown. That 29-yard run to me was sort of symbolic of the whole year. You know, you start 4-7 and you cut Andre Rison, and you go on this winning streak and you get to the Atlanta game, and now you got to have this Morton Anderson miss, and then you go to Buffalo. You know what I mean? It just, that to me is my favorite play in Jaguars history. That was a unbelievable game.
And all those moments made possible because
of Wayne.
1993, they make a phone call to Wayne Weaver, and he decides to come and put his money up and be the lead owner and figure out a strategy to convince the NFL that Jacksonville deserved to be the 30th franchise.
I thought for a brief moment you were going to say because of the left tackle.
No, I was going to say my favorite play of that game was when we went to, after we got the onside kick and we took a knee. Two straight times. All I could think about is, do not fumble the ball. Don't fumble the snap. Let's get out of here, because that was a lot of fun.
Well, see, there's so many.
I remember when the franchise was awarded. I was in New York, you know, and my contract was going to expire when the expansion process came about. So
you were thinking.
Well, I was avidly following exactly which city was going to get a football team, because I knew that they would be players in the free agent market in a big way. And so Carolina was awarded, and I said to myself, you know, there's a chance. And then when Jacksonville got it, I was like, Jacksonville, yeah. I drove through that city when I was on my way to bike week in 89.
I like it there.
Yeah, right.
They got. And I remember, you know, we were coming down. It was actually it was 1990, because it was in the springtime of 90. And on the way down, we unhooked the motorcycles from the trailers and had some people drive. And then me and a buddy of mine got on the bikes, and we rode through. And I remember coming across the Fuller Warren Bridge and seeing this beautiful city lit up at night. And that was my first memory ever of Jacksonville.
You're lucky you missed the snow by a couple months.
Yeah, I guess so.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Jacksonville was awarded it, and then I remember that I could end up being, you know, in Jacksonville, or right. I could end up being – in Carolina. And then when Dom Capers got the job,
you knew
in Carolina,
you were on 3-4.
3-4.
Yeah.
You know, I was a down guy. I said, well, that's not a possibility. And when Jacksonville named Tom Coughlin and Dick Duron and all of that, I said, might be in Jacksonville. And you I remember my first visit ever here. Plane got delayed and came down here, and somebody picked me up, and I can't remember his name, but I got interrogated in the limousine on the way to the Ponte Vedra Inn and Club at the beach, I guess it was.
Actually, they put me up at the lodge, right?
Yeah, the lodge. That's what it was. Yeah. And I was going, dude, are you like a spy? And he goes, yeah, pretty much. And got a chance to meet Wayne. You know, at that time, you know, the free agents come in. You know, you meet, you know, of course, Tom Coughlin and, you know, Wayne Weaver. I was like, you know, I'm ready for something new. And I remember I came down here and I just fell in love with this place, and I've been here ever since.
I didn't have a choice.
No, you didn't. But you know what?
You got a big check.
You got a. You were very, very fortunate. Trust me.
It's funny because people all the time ask me, and they asked me back then, are you disappointed that you're going to an expansion team? Because, you know, being a rookie, NFL, not going to a team with legacy, or are you disappointed? And I said from day one, never, I actually always counted it as an honor to be the part of something new and be the first pick and a part of the legacy of this franchise. And like Jeff, fell in love with the team and the city. And when it was time to figure out where to live, I mean, this was home.
Pretty easy.
I mean, it was easy. And so I would not have, you know, and people still ask, you know, what was it like doing an expansion? I wouldn't have I wouldn't trade it for anything. To be a part of building a franchise and to be there from the beginning.
And to be a part of all of the firsts.
Right.
You know, and all that was
made. You wouldn't trade it for anything.
Wouldn't trade it for anything. No. And the only reason why it's possible, Wayne Weaver.
Yep. Well, and you're both still here today. Mm-hmm. A part of the franchise in so many different ways. So talk about opportunity. How many players who sign free agent contracts can look down the road 17 years and say, I'll still be doing something? Most can't.
Well, it's because it's part of it is because of how special the place is.
Yeah. No, and, no doubt. No doubt. Part of it's
and the opportunity at the front end.
Mr. Weaver, absolutely.
Yeah. No, it's a lot of things that come together.
But when you signed that contract to come play in Jacksonville, you probably weren't thinking, all these years from now, I'll do the radio broadcast, I'll have a hunting fishing show.
No.
I mean, you were signing a life at that point.
You know what I was thinking of at that point?
I was 23 years old. I was thinking, what the heck am I doing?
You know what I was thinking? I hope all the rumors about Coughlin aren't true.
And with that, we break. And they were all true.
And they were all true, my friend.
They were understatements.
And worse.
Yeah. News is next here on News Talk WOKV. All right, welcome back. Hour number two, our final second hour of 2011. Next week, it's just a one-hour show, and it's going to seem like a cakewalk, although we'll probably have plenty to talk about.
And we're going to have a new boss.
That much is correct. 355-NFL1, at Tony Boselli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice, call Loggy. Anthony starts this hour out from San Diego. Anthony, how are you tonight?
I'm great. I wanted to share my Jaguars story. Like most people, unlike most people in the San Diego area, I actually grew up a Jaguars fan, played football in college, actually got invited to the combine, and my lifelong dream was to become a Jacksonville Jaguar. So I land in Indianapolis, I get to the combine. We're herded in there like cattle. I look around. I see Coach Del Rio. I see Shaq Harris. I see Gene Smith. And my heart just starts to explode because I'm like, I'm so close. I'm so close. I'm so close. I'm going to be a Jaguar. Draft day comes around. My pro day comes around. I get there. I work out. None of the Jaguar scouts are there. But, you know, you just never know with the process. Draft day comes around. I end up going undrafted. I spent some time with the Bills on their practice squad. I spent some time with the Giants on their practice squad. Spent some time with the Chargers on their practice squad. And every time my phone rang or whenever I got cut and practice and workout day came around, I always was hoping for the Jaguars' phone number to show up on my phone or my agent say, hey, the Jacksonville Jaguars want you to come. And so I wanted to thank Wayne and Dolores Weaver for what they brought to Jacksonville because no matter where I was, the Jacksonville Jaguars were still my home team, or were still my team and the team that I wanted to play for more than anything. And so to Wayne and Dolores Weaver, I really wanted to say thank you for the dream that you helped create in me, although it didn't become a reality. And I never got to put on the jersey the way Tony did and the way Jeff Loggeman did. The Jacksonville Jaguars are still my favorite team no matter where I am in the United States, And I want to thank them for the awesome organization and just helping me to have something else to strive for while playing the game of football.
That's great.
Thanks, Anthony.
Yeah,
great
call,
story.
Anthony.
Great story. I got a tweet from Lori that says
Lori.
Well, I don't know if we should say
okay.
Her last name. Yeah.
Okay.
But just a tweeter.
Thought maybe some of you knew.
No, I don't know her. In reference to Kevin, the great call we had earlier, and she says, totally agree with everything Kevin said. Thank you for the memories with my dad.
Yeah, I got the same one.
Yeah.
Big.
Yeah.
Yeah, same one.
And so you get a lot of fun. I mean, and it's funny, as you know, we've done Team Teal for 2 years now and a lot of interaction and going out and talking to the fans and everything else. And one of the stories I always communicate growing up in Colorado and being a Bronco fan, some of the greatest times are the times going with my dad to an NFL game and sitting in the stands and ordering a Coke or a Pepsi here. If you're in Jacksonville, ordering a Pepsi and some nachos and, you know, whatever, and sitting there having the memories and to hear, you know, Kevin and Lori and different. I mean, that's why the NFL is so great. It's not the wins and losses. Listen, there's nobody who hates losing more than any of us, and it's all about winning at the end of the day. But the memories that surround those times are priceless.
Just throw this out there since you bring that up. Do you know which team has won more games in NFL history than any other? Who has more career wins? What franchise has the most wins?
The Bears.
Exactly. Now, do you know which franchise has the most losses?
The Bears.
The Bears.
Uh-huh.
I mean, but my wife's family's all from Chicago, and they talk about the Bears with love because it didn't matter whether they were winning or losing. It was the Bears.
It was their team.
It was the memories that they had with their family and friends at being at Soldier Field, and it's the same thing. There will be kids who have been out here the last 7 or 8 years when it
hasn't
been
all that
good. Exactly. Yeah. But when they start winning, there you go.
Well, I mean, I got
all those memories have been created.
I got five of them. Yeah. And all of them, the baby, I mean, she doesn't know what's going on, but the four that understand, and especially the two boys that are older, they love the Jags. I mean, They love going to the game.
And Wayne made an outstanding point. To us who have been here, it feels like a long time. 17, 18 years feels like a long time. It's nothing compared to these franchises that are established. You've got great grandfathers and, you know, great great grandfathers who've had season tickets forever. You know, this town is still building toward that, and you know, and it's it takes time. It takes years of losing and pain and frustration and then ecstasy. I mean, you know, we're still going through the emotions of all that and the journey, I guess, to use that, you know, word.
355 NFL One. It took Wayne Weaver selling the franchise to bring Barb back to the airwaves. Been a long time, lady.
I know. Hello, men.
How are you?
I got a bit of the yuck, but I'm hanging in there. Listen, I really appreciated Wayne's admission that he'd made some mistakes in judgment. But I want to tell you one thing that he didn't make a mistake on. I went to the very first fan forum that he held. And I stood up and I asked him. I was this, you know, stay-at-home mom at that time, and my husband was working two jobs, and I desperately wanted to be a season ticket holder. And I asked him, I said, is there any way that you can maybe offer a one-year deal with no deposit so that I could be a season ticket holder? Because that's what I really wanted to do. I grew up a Redskin fan, and the only time I ever saw RFK Stadium was when we were driving by on the way to a swimming meet. And hopefully that'll be the case with the Jacksonville Jaguars tickets at some point. But anyways, when I mentioned that, he was flanked by, I think, Edwards and Prescott, and they all looked at me like I had three heads. And one of them said, well, you can buy 2 4-packs. I said, well, that's not the point. I want to be a season ticket holder. And, well, I'm sorry, you can buy 2 4-packs. And then the fans were behind me were booing me because, and I understand that, because they paid deposits and all that stuff. So, I'm fine with that. I was a little miffed at Mr. Weaver for a couple months after that. But later on in the paper was announced, Jaguars announcing new season ticket plan, 1 year. Season ticket, easy pay, 10 payments. And so I went to the draft day fan fest and I bought 2 of them. And I was over my annoyance with Mr. Weaver because I was now a season ticket holder and that's all I wanted. And I'm still a season ticket holder and I will be until the day I die. I go with my son and, you know, we create memories there.
It's a beautiful
it's
thing,
great,
Barb. It's a beautiful thing.
It's awesome.
And you know what? Those are the kind of stories, you know, Barb's talking about when she's taking her kids to the game.
Yep.
You know, in my youth, I got to go to 1 Redskin game in my life. 1.
Who'd they play?
Have no idea. But it didn't matter. I got to go.
Right.
You know, and there I was sitting with my dad, you know, that, you know, at that time getting Redskins tickets was nearly impossible. And we were up in, I think it's the north end zone, upper deck, whatever it is on the north side of that stadium. And I remember that like it was yesterday. You know, I mean, and those are the kind of memories that, you know, growing up and you know, hey, look, generations are going to have that to look forward to in Jacksonville.
My best high school graduation present was friends of ours in D.C. said I could use 2 of their tickets. And I saw Redskins Eagles Thanksgiving weekend 1983. And, it's the kind of thing that creates, you know, lifelong allegiance to the sport, to the, you know, at the time, the team. But, you know, it's absolutely those are the kind of memories, and, you know, someday that'll be the case here.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean, like you were saying. I grew up really close, walking distance, to the Vet. And as far as I can remember, I've never been to an Eagles game.
Right.
Never seen a play. You couldn't. It just didn't happen.
Until 2006 when we went?
Yeah.
At the Link?
Yeah, at the Link.
You never saw an Eagles game at the Vet?
At the Vet, no.
All right.
No, maybe when I was little I went to Franklin Field. I don't quite remember.
But let me ask you
this.
That
was a long time ago, though.
But let me ask you this, Joe. Sunday afternoons, what do you remember?
Oh, watching them on TV.
There you go.
They were on TV.
Because, see, I remember those Sundays. Oh. And our Sundays in the fall
revolved around
the Redskins game.
We had Pat Summerall and Tom Brookshire doing our game. I don't know if you remember those names.
Oh, yeah.
But that's who did our games.
Yeah, I mean, that's the memories that I grew up with on Sunday.
And you know what? We're building that here. And I know, you know, and one of the things I'm excited about, and I think we're going to see this with Shad Khan, is the talk of moving and poor us and this inferiority complex and this attitude going to leave. And because we are, and Wayne said it, we're closer on the field than people think, and I believe that. But we're closer and we're further along than we think. If you, this fan base is a good fan base.
Well, go look at Cincinnati.
This is a good fan base. It's the best fan base in Florida. It'll continue to grow, and I am extremely confident. And we communicate this all the time as we go out and talk to people, because I believe it that this is a great football market. And if we stay the course and we start winning again, like we will, you will see this be a legacy franchise.
Absolutely.
When my grandchildren are hopefully living in Jacksonville and are Jaguar fans, and I'm sitting too old to get to the stadium, but sitting at home watching the game, and they're filling the stands.
And, Tony, I think you see the same thing in person that I get in the inbox every morning. Fans really, really want this team to do well.
Oh, I mean, gosh.
There's an energy, and especially after Mr. Khan bought the team and, you know, the coaching change coming up. You know, there's such a feeling of energy and of, let's make this happen. We want something to grab onto. And so it's exciting. I mean, there's no question that the energy's moving in the right direction.
Good friend of mine, Christmas night, hanging out with him and the family and a couple other families, and he said, man, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
He said, I have not been a season ticket holder for 2 years. I'm getting them this year. I can't wait.
There is going to be a groundswell around this. And you've got a quarterback. You've got a new coach coming in.
Let's talk about Blaine a little bit in the second half of the show.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a break.
Because he's making great progress, and we've definitely highlighted the problems.
Right.
Which are fair.
Sure.
But I saw some things, and Jeff's been more bullish. I've been a believer, but have been a little bit slower. But I saw some things on the tape that I was very impressed with, and had some conversations with some people who know quarterback a lot better than anyone else in this room, that pretty exciting.
I played the position.
Well, that's true. I forgot. You're a gamer.
He's gamer.
You're
right
a gamer from Pop Warner, but I'm excited. Baby.
All right, let's do it. We take it. Barb, thanks for your call. Good to hear from you after all these years. We take this break and return. More to come here on Jaguars Radio.
Leo.
All right, rolling right along. We'll break for news here at the bottom of the hour about 8 minutes from now, and then we'll finish up strong here on Jaguars this week. Final 2 hour edition. You want to talk quarterback? Let's go.
No, before we go there.
We're talking about Loggy's wife.
I got to give Loggy's wife some props.
Why aren't you licking the pie plate?
Because I have class.
for this segment, wait till we get to the commercial.
That is the best answer I've heard all day. I have class.
He hasn't had time yet.
I'm an expert. A pecan pie.
Pecan.
My mother-in-law makes a great homemade pecan pie. My wife does. And Jeff brought this. I was a little leery of digging in because I've had bad pecan pie as well. And he... So I decided I should not be rude because his wife made it. And I got to say...
Consume 1,000 calories.
I got to say, hats off because that's a good pecan pie.
You mean it was?
Wait a minute! I don't get any
pie.
Props for my 10-hour cook job on the shredded pork barbecue.
The shredded pork was good. The
that's rating it for you.
The onion the soaked in vinegar
was good,
outstanding.
Wasn't it? Yep.
But
when it gets to be the holidays, now Loggy Cooks, you weren't here for the venison. The venison cube steak at Thanksgiving?
Mm. You have no idea how much I can eat.
Oh, no, we do. Yeah, really. The Anchor Bar Buffalo.
if you just walked into that one.
If you would have brought the whole thing,
you would have eaten
the whole thing. I love pecan pie. Oh,
that much is obvious.
That was good.
All right, let's go.
We'll get to the quarterback after the break. Why don't we do the callers, and then the second half of this hour we'll do, Blaine Gabbert.
All right, so let's grab Linda in Arlington next. Hello, Linda.
Hey, guys. How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
Okay. Happy New Year to you. I just want to share a couple of, I think, really great memories of the early days. I will tell you that my husband and I have been season ticket holders the entire history of the franchise, and we'll continue to support the team. But I was a new football fan, brand new, didn't really know much about it. Everything all looked alike to me until we got the team. And then, being a Jacksonville native, it was very exciting. So we went to an event at Prime Osborne Center where there were some players and some media and things. And I remember there was a crowd gathered around this guy in a mustard-colored sport coat. I thought, well, he must be a player. I wonder who he is. Well, it was James Stewart. There were others and so forth.
I thought you were going to say Keenan McCardell.
I know. Well, anyway, but he was very classy looking. Okay, I know mustard, whatever. So I look over in the corner, and here's this big, enormous black guy with a date. They're both very attractive, kind of standing off to the side. And I thought, wow, I wonder who he is. Well, I don't want to go up and say, gosh, are you a player? So I was trying to kind of tease his name out of him, which he never really gave me. But I finally kind of looked him up and down, and I think I just said something like, do you play football? And he said, no, not really. And I kind of sized him up again and said, well, you know, you seriously ought to consider it. Well, guess who it was? Leon Searcy. Mm-hmm. It was too funny. But anyway, that said, Jeff, I remember you had a TV show on Channel 4 years ago, and my husband and I, the diehard fans that we were, drove down in a driving rainstorm, and we were the only two that showed up. I mean, usually you had a great crowd, but the weather was so horrible, but it was kind of amusing, and thank you for not making fun of us. Mm-hmm. And thank you for the recommendation for a great book. It's Football, the Violent Chess Match, and made a great gift. And I will tell you that you were also a prize in a silent auction. It was a fishing trip. Couldn't bait a hook, but I bid on you anyway.
Well, I appreciate that, Linda.
Yeah. But and Tony, thank you for your great play and the memories of you as an outstanding athlete. We have a picture of you during one of the scrimmages with you and Mark Brunell down on the sideline kind of throwing the football back and forth, and it looked like he was maybe giving you some passing tips. It's a classic photo. But I look forward to the new year. Change can be scary, but I think it's a good thing. It certainly re-energized me, and I'm looking forward to the next season, and I'm looking forward to Sunday's game.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, Linda.
355-NFL-1. Let's grab a final caller.
I have a big arm. Throwing that ball around.
You do have a big arm.
Yeah,
we saw
your reach for the pie real quick there.
Tell you what, I wish there was more.
No doubt. And he means it, folks. Gary's in Fernandina Beach. Final call of this half hour. Hello, Gary.
How dare you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for letting me get in here. I'll make it quick. Been here since 1973. We were season ticket holders for the Jacksonville Bulls. We were there for the Jim Irsay helicopter thing. And been a season ticket holder with the Jags since the beginning, section 123. Probably my fondest memory, there's tons of them, but one was the field goal miss that got us into the playoffs, the Falcons. What was the kicker's name?
Morton Anderson.
Yep, Morton Anderson, when he missed. And that was a moment, along with all of the neat rivalries that we had before the realignment, especially the Steelers. Those are great games that we used to have with the Steelers. And that Monday night game really comes to mind. But really just want to thank Wayne. Thank you, Tony. I've got to meet you. You were up in Fernandina Beach once. You signed a football for me and a sweatshirt, and your effort and your emotion is real sincere. It really shows. And I know I speak for a lot of people for that we appreciate all the good work that all you guys do. And we're looking forward to the future, onward and upward. I'm excited. I'm excited about the future. And, again, just the main reason is just thank you, Wayne. Thank you, Wayne. Thank you, Dolores. All you guys who have really, really made an impact on Jacksonville. I can't call it my home. Well, I do. We moved here in 73. I was in eighth grade, so that gives you perspective. It's my hometown now.
Thanks, Gary. We appreciate it. We've reached the bottom of the hour.
That's good stuff. I mean, that's what it's all about, is creating the memories around the game.
You betcha.
You know, and that's what we all have had growing up, although your memories, Brian, not so good.
Yeah, no. St. Louis Cardinals, really quite bad, to be honest with you. You want to go ahead and tease the...
Yeah, you had Jim Hart, though, again.
Yeah. You want to tease the quarterback thing?
Yeah.
Comparisons to Hart, no problem.
Yeah, yeah, I know right. Who Hart is, but we're not going to compare it to Jim Hart.
Go ahead.
No, I think both Log and I talked about it before the show started. Saw a lot of good things from Blaine Gabbert. He's gotten beat up quite a bit in the media this year. Some of it justified, some of it not. But I think what's been lost in the last, because we're losing, change of coaching, change of ownership, is he's getting better. And I saw a lot of things that were very positive that I think that can be built on for next year.
All right. And the tease part, you talked to somebody.
Well, and then some of the things that we talked about of being an issue, can it be coached? And I talked to somebody who knows quarterback pretty well and got his opinion.
All right, then we'll get it. Boy, listen to him. He sounds like a professional radio announcer.
It's a tease, Osh. That's what it is, a tease.
I like it. I'm teased.
Let's not go there. News is next.
Jeremy.
All right, about 24 minutes left in Jaguars this week. We've got callers on the line, but as promised, we're going to talk quarterback now. Tony, you teased quite expertly.
Yes,
that
you've
seen things over the last 4 to 5 weeks, and you've talked to some people, so lay it on us.
Okay, so if you look at Blaine Gabbert, and I think one of the biggest things that my guess is if the Ozone gets letters about Blaine and lack of development and is he the future quarterback, and you start hearing people – I said Ozone – people start talking about should this team draft another quarterback if it's in the position. I mean, all this banter and
constant
banter. Judge and looking at is you hear the Monday Night Crew saying that Blaine Gabbert is scared. He looks soft. I mean, all this stuff based on little snippets. I think that's dangerous. Number one, to make a jump to a conclusion too quickly. But I also think you have to look at the body of work and where he started. And I think Jeff's done a good job of this, looking at the fact that the plan all along was to bring him in and let him sit on the bench and learn from David and, you know, kind of crawl before you walk before you run type of attitude. Because he only played 2 years at Missouri. He's a 22-year-old kid playing the spread. Not a lot of snaps. And I think everyone knew that coming in. But he has a huge upside when it comes to talent. And I think a lot of the discussion from day one that we've talked about on this show, forget the big arm. We know he has that. Forget the fact that he works hard. We know he has that. Forget the fact that he's smart. We know he's that. I think we all agree. Now, people would disagree with us because they look at a piece of film the way ESPN might show it. They think he's soft. But I think all of us seeing him and the toughness, getting up, playing hurt, not missing a snap, you know, bruised ribs. I mean, I think we all agree he's a tough kid, too. I don't think any of us thinks he's soft. I mean, Jeff, I don't think you do. I don't.
No, he's tough.
And
nobody you talk to even privately intimates it.
In-house. I mean, we would hear that. Right. We would hear that if that was the case. So all those – but the one thing we have all talked about, and I've been vocal about, is I worry about the pocket presence. Does he look at the rush? Does he have that innate ability to maneuver in the pocket, feel pressure, and still deliver the ball in traffic? Early, he could not. Looking at the last 4 weeks – in this game, as much as any, he was very active in the pocket in a good way, stepping up. For the longest time, he fell away. Everything was a backup. If he felt pressure, he tried to back up and run outside the pocket, which is a disaster in any type of passing scheme. Now he's stepping up. He's feeling the rush. He's letting the ends come around him and trying to maneuver and sidestepping and moving up in the pocket and looking downfield and making throws. I still think footwork and everything he needs to work on.
Oh, so here, let's get to the kicker, because me and you had this discussion.
Yep.
I guess it was last week, and that you were concerned that that's not something that's teachable. And
that was the question I had.
And my thought was that, hey, look, when a player gets comfortable in the system and learns, that settles down.
Absolutely.
Now, the conversation that
you had. So the conversation I had this week is because I wasn't saying it wasn't coachable, isn't coachable, or it is. But I said, is that something? Because that is a – you're not teaching someone how to throw the ball or read a defense or whatever. It's a presence that they have, that all the great ones have. And so I was doing the Jets-Giants this game this weekend, and Mark's the backup quarterback, Brunell, up in New York. Been around 19 years now. Been around a couple good quarterbacks. Spent 2 or 3 years with Drew Brees. And I was talking to him, and he was asking about what's going on here because he still cares about this. You know, this is where he'll make home sooner or later and cares about the franchise and everything else. And he was asking about what's going on and everything. And so I started asking about Blaine, and he said, well, what's the kid like? Can he play? And he hadn't seen anything. And so we were going through some of the things that I just talked about. And I asked him, I said, listen, here's the big knock. And I talked about pocket presence. First thing he questioned, he asked me, is he a tough kid? Is he scared? And I said, no, I don't think he's scared. I think he's a tough kid. And then I asked him, I said, can you coach presence in the pocket? Can that be taught? And without hesitating, he said, absolutely. He says, presence in the pocket and comfort in the pocket comes from knowing where you're supposed to go with the ball and feeling confident with what's happening down the field. Because when you understand what the defense is trying to do to you and your scheme and how you're trying to attack a defense and where everybody is, then your ability to feel comfortable in the pocket and feel pressure and still know where to go with the ball starts to happen naturally. When you don't have that confidence and you're not sure if guys are going to get open or who's going where or what's happening, he says the natural tendency, and if you get hit a few times, you start looking around trying to figure out, how am I going to get out of here? What's the escape route? You know, where is the pressure coming from? Because I have no clue what's going down the field. And I bring that up because is if you really study the tape, and this is not to talk demean any fan. It is to demean a lot of the media, especially in this town, and that they make statements not looking at the tape. And they make statements based on a couple highlights that the
they make statements based on what they heard John Gruden say.
Exactly right. I will say this, that if you watch the tape and you look at the progression, and then based on what I heard from Mark, who I trust and has been around this league and knows quarterback position as well as anybody, that you can see him getting better, and that tells me that an offseason and proper coaching and training and the dedication that I think he'll put in, because that's what he's shown, I think it is a lot. He still has to do it, but I'm much more bullish, and if I'm betting money, I bet that he becomes the franchise quarterback that we drafted him to do.
You talk about the national broadcasters, the Gruden and all that. What does it require to form, you know, an opinion?
Nothing.
A little bit of work.
Right.
You know, a little bit of work.
No, a real opinion or just a bunch of junk?
A professional opinion instead of something that, you know, is going to grab people's emotions.
Well, you got to watch tape.
You got to watch the tape. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of people don't. You know, Steve Tasker might hear what a John Gruden
right.
said, and then he's going to follow up with that, because if he doesn't say that, then, well, you know, hey, I'm wrong if I don't reiterate what John Gruden says.
It's become trendy now to bash Blaine for that.
Sure.
And it's going to continue to be trendy. Realistically, the thing that will happen is, not this season, not this weekend, sometime next year he'll have better numbers, and somebody who everybody thinks is important will come out and say, oh, the pocket presence is better. And everybody will go, oh! And then it'll turn
so
the other
true.
Way.
Well,
and that's just how it's going to work in this league.
And along the lines of what Mark was telling you, Tony, what Mark was talking about, comfort about knowing what's down the field. For a quarterback, it's also knowing what's in front of you. If you see a guy blitzing, but you know what the protection is and you know you got a guy assigned to that guy, then you know you got a comfort level. He's going to get picked up by so-and-so. I'm okay. You know, so it's also comfort in knowing what the protection is up front from a time standpoint, knowing where he's got time, what he's got time to do with the ball.
And let me take it one step further than that, because what's impressed me, and I can remember sitting here, I think it was after the first or second preseason game, we talked about, boy, you don't want to see a quarterback back up when he feels pressure and try to run outside. That's the most dangerous place for him. But it's hard. It's hard for a guy to say, I'm going to step up into the fray and let it come around me. That's not natural. And he didn't do that for the first half of the year. But if you watch, and what gives me great confidence, and this is why I'm convinced, and I was convinced before this, but why it confirms what I believe, that he is a tough kid, is if you watch the progression, and which tells me he watches film and he's being coached and taught, that he is now stepping up. And Logs, I'm sure you saw it on this tape. How often did he let those ends go around, sidestep, step up in the pocket, all the time looking down the field and deliver the ball? He's still got to get his feet better and get his feet set. That takes time and progress.
All right, let me ask you, Brian and John, because you guys were at all the games too. Tell me the moment that you knew Blaine Gabbert was tough.
I wasn't even there.
I can tell you right now.
I know when it was.
Well, the hit that he took against Brian Cushing.
There you go.
Yeah. When I was told that story, I said, well,
he stands right back
up.
He's
not soft.
He starts yelling at Cushing, yep. Goes to the sideline, he's in pain, they wrap it up, right. Boom, he's back in the game right then and there.
And there's been a couple other spots, too, where he's run. And I kept thinking all during the first part of the year, he was never hesitant to run when the opportunity was right, and he was never hesitant to stick his head in. You almost saw him sticking his head in when you wished he had slid sometimes. So the toughness thing never really washed. I mean, but there were a few games in the middle of the season where you could see him really trying to work on it, maybe even to a fault, stepping in when he maybe should have scrambled. And you could sort of see the machinations starting to work I've got to get better at this. Probably didn't know quite how to get better at first because you're learning on the fly. And then probably made some mistakes, goes back into coaching and says, no, you should have done it here. Okay, I get it. And you move forward.
Kid's 22 years old. He's young.
You know, this is totally subjective. So if you don't agree with me, you're just as right as I am on this one. Loggy, he and I do Jaguars All Access, and on Monday night, Blaine was our guest. It was the first time I had spent any extended time in a relaxed setting around Blaine, and I was completely impressed with his confidence. The way that his accountability was there, he was willing to take it, listen to it, give back. I was just completely impressed with him as a person, and you've got to be with a guy who's going to lead your football team. So
very impressive Monday night on Jaguars All Access.
Hit the button.
Jeez, Joe,
golly,
where are you at tonight?
My goodness,
that's
wake
like
up.
That's like the second miss.
And I agree. I wasn't there Monday night, but I've had a chance to talk to him one-on-one on the field before the game.
But this was a completely relaxed setting.
No, but I come across the same feeling. That he is a guy that is maturing. Is accountable, wants to be good.
Yep. He's willing to pay the price.
Willing to pay the price. And I got to tell you, you just watch the tape and you can see him getting better. And I watch it every week, and there's times early in the year I'm going, wow. It's not where you start. Yep. It's where you finish. And the fact that he's a young player, he's only going to get better. And the things that you can't teach, he has. He has the big arm and everything.
Sully's coming around.
No, I've never not been against it. My point last week is when you said, well, he has a big arm. I don't care. Big arm doesn't determine whether you're a great quarterback or not.
You were a little bearish.
I was bearish on the fact that if we were going to make a judgment about a quarterback based on his arm.
And we got to take a break, but just a quick thing.
We can replay the tape if you like.
A quick thing on
– Let's go to the tape.
Go to the tape.
A quick thing on not being too quick to pull the trigger on a player.
Yeah.
Do you realize that in the spring of 1996, after they gave Keenan McCardell $8.6 million, he had a lousy first minicamp here, and there were coaches who wondered how they were going to explain to the owner how they had wasted $8 million of his money. They didn't think Keenan McCardell could play when they had signed him. Of course, it turned out much differently.
Well, all they had to do was talk to Keenan.
He turned out great. You can't pull the trigger too quick.
No, it's way too early.
Way too early.
And it's become trendy. The problem is, it's become trendy. Okay. And I love – I know we got to go break, but this is my favorite because I hear it traveling on the road and you hear the national media. This is my favorite that's come up lately. Oh, I knew this. I saw this at the last few tapes that he played in college. I'm like, really? Where were you before the draft when everyone said he was the it was either him or Cam Newton as the best quarterback? Yeah. So you saw this. Now, I'm like, you're a joke.
Revisionist history.
That's why it's the fans have any opinion you want. It's the media that drives me crazy because they don't do their homework and really look at it from an objective standpoint. They get lazy. Much like the perception that was built that we are the worst franchise when it comes to ticket sales.
Same deal.
One person said it. It was trendy. It's easy. I still hear it today. And there are a bunch of ignorant, poor excuses for professionals as far as doing their work to really find out what's going on.
They got the media. They got the buy one, get one.
I hate the media. I'm part of it, but.
Buy one, get one free Bengals to beat up on now. We take this break and come back and wrap up the show after this on Jaguars Radio. All right, what'd you say, Joe? 6 minutes left? It's been a fast-paced show this evening. You know, something that strikes me is we were just talking a little bit about coaching and the coaching search, and we haven't really talked about it at all. Not since.
You know why?
Well,
in my opinion,
the ownership's a part of it because we don't know how he's going to what his thought process is.
Yeah, I mean,
we don't know him.
I don't think we can speculate even on who the next coach is going to
be. Well, here's the deal with that: the Weavers and Shad Khan's crew were supposedly in negotiations since September of 10. We heard nothing. Do you think there's a chance that we're going to hear a whisper?
No.
Who's going to fill the head coaching position?
No, and I wasn't necessarily meaning us, but you know, normally you get callers to the show and they want to talk
about
this.
I don't think anybody knows.
Right. Well, no, I'm not saying anybody does know. What I'm saying is that the interest level in the coaching search has not picked up yet. And
right.
I'm a little surprised that since Jack has left, November 30th, that we have not heard a lot of who's the next coach going to be, when are they going to hire the coach,
I think part
college
of it is
or pro, all of that stuff.
It was so early in the season. Right. There was so much football left to be played. I bet you next week when the season is over.
That's the time for it.
I bet you we start hearing who the next
coach. Well, but, yeah, they're talking about it in Miami right now, and they're talking about it in Kansas City. I think it's the ownership change that has everybody
focused.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Yeah.
It's sort of taking the attention off of that.
Does Romeo Crennel get that job in Kansas City?
I don't know. I'm not connected to that so much anymore now that Pioli took over out there. So, no, why not? He's a good coach. But
there's ties.
Yeah, with Pioli in the days in New England. He did a hell of a job getting them ready for that Packers game. I mean,
if they beat Denver, I bet you he's the next coach.
And there's a lot of people in the league who thinks he deserves a second chance. You know, he's in a tough spot in Cleveland, and people think he can coach.
Kansas City's best run since the Super Bowl years. So we're going back now to the 69
season. Hank Stram.
Their best run was Marty Schottenheimer, who was not the most vocal, not the most flamboyant coach. He was just a solid,
good
defensive
coach.
And
never could get it done in the playoffs, though.
No, but he and Carl Peterson came in, and they took a team that in the 80s.
Oh, they were terrible.
Look, I was at the season finale at Arrowhead Stadium in 1984 when they played the New York Jets, and there were 16,000 people in that 80,000-seat stadium.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, I was there. I was there. And then a few years later, they go draft Neil Smith, Derek Thomas. You know, they go grab, you know, Mikowski. Not Mikowski. What was his name? Barkowski? Not Barkowski. What can I think of his
Steve
name?
Steve DeBerg.
DeBerg.
From Denver. He came over from Denver.
They called him the Magic Man because, he played with that thing in his – anyway, they turned it around very quickly in Kansas City, and they didn't do it by going out and hiring the biggest name coach, although Marty had been to the AFC title game. I think Crennel fits Kansas City's personality.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that. How many openings are there going to be?
God, there was eight last year.
Well, there's going to be at least four because
St. Louis will be the fourth.
St. Louis will be the fourth.
But Tampa's
I can't believe that they won't fire him.
If they lose out.
Well,
and they
the
go to Atlanta,
thing,
so they're
the other thing about Tampa, too, is that you've got a general manager there, in Mark Dominic, I believe his name
is. Mark Dominic.
That did not get to choose the head coach.
No. Sounds very familiar.
You know, so – I wouldn't be a bit surprised, and I can honestly say this. If I'm an owner and I'm watching tape as much as I do, Tampa Bay may be the most embarrassing football team that I have watched in a long time.
I agree, Jeff. I did a game.
They play like they don't care.
And I did a game when they were still in it against the Houston Texans, and they got beat up pretty good in the first half. They quit in the second half. But even worse to me was they come out in the game and half of them have their shirt tails hanging out below. I mean, they looked like a Pop Warner football team. Just
looked like a Richie Kotite coached Eagles team.
That's a move in the opposite direction of last year.
How about that one, Joe?
For that.
Well, so what?
It's not what you want to look like.
No.
So you've got three that are open, and you could add Tampa.
St. Louis is coming
St.
open.
St. Louis and San Diego to it.
San Diego will come open too.
So there's six right there.
And perhaps the Giants, because Tom might step away. I mean,
And
Tom's going to step away?
Well, I mean, that's what you hear. You hear there's
And there's word in Buffalo that Chan Gailey is not on solid ground.
I mean, I was just up in New York, and everything I hear up there is that they're not going to get another coach.
So from five to seven coaches.
No, I meant that he might retire. You always hear that every year, that he's decided at the end of every year.
And I bring it up.
I don't think he will. I hope he
doesn't. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so.
I bring it up because if you have between five and seven jobs open, there's going to be a lot of competition for the assistants. There's going to be a lot of competition for the good assistant coaches. And we remember, if you remember.
Yeah, but you know the one thing that this market has advantage-wise over other markets? I mean, the word is out about this city. Assistants love
great city. And and you have a new owner that the word's going to get out that it wants to win and new energy. And Jacksonville's a great place to live. No state income taxes. You know, a young team.
Great place to raise a family.
Top five defense already. A lot of pieces in place there.
You would be shocked how many emails I get in the Ozone, Joe, that asking, can the Jaguars lure a good coach to this market?
Oh, gosh, yes.
And I laugh every time I see it because the reality is if you know coaches – this is a great job because they love, you know, everything you want that you guys just talked about is here. The perception is different, but the reality is this is an easy place
just
to
gotta work hard.
Well,
it's going to be interesting, that's for sure.
It's going to be very competitive.
From a league standpoint,
you bet.
You know, across the board.
Very, very competitive. It's good for assistant coaches.
Priority number one, I would assume, for the new owner, Shad Khan. And I guarantee you the wheels have been in motion.
Yeah, you got to get it right.
Finally, all the talk is over.
Thank you.
Happy New Year, everybody.